Quest for Gold. I'm Ryan Burrow. We are 119 days out from the Olympic opening ceremony in Paris. I'm reporting this week from Freeport on the island of Grand Bahama in the Bahamas. There's no connection between my visit here and the Olympic movement. However, it is worth noting the Bahamas has fielded an Olympic team for every summer games dating back to 1952. The country has never sent any athletes to the Winter Games. The biggest sports here, track and field and sailing. Rugby is also tremendously popular, and there is an opportunity in July for the Bahamian men's basketball team to squeak into one of the final spots in the Olympic pool. Among the NBAers who could be on that team, Klay Thompson, who actually played for Team USA and won gold in 2016. His father grew up here in the Bahamas. And Philadelphia 76ers player Buddy Hield, he's from where I am in Freeport. It's actually his hometown. Well, let's stick with basketball. USA Basketball officially named its men's 3-on-3 roster for Paris, including Jimmer Fredette, Kenyon Barry, Kareem Maddox, and Dylan Travis, while the U.S. women's 3-on-3 team took gold in Tokyo during the inaugural Olympic program for 3-on-3. The men didn't even qualify for the games that year, so it will be the first time Team USA will try and win a medal, potentially giving the U.S. a shot at 4 basketball medals in Paris. Meanwhile, the pools have been announced for the men's 5-on-5 tournament in Paris. The U.S. is guaranteed to face South Sudan and Nikola Jokic and Serbia in pool play. The fourth team entering will either be Mexico, Ivory Coast, Lithuania, Italy, Puerto Rico, or Bahrain. That will be determined following an upcoming qualifying tournament in Puerto Rico. The U.S. men's team is looking for its 5th straight gold. On the women's side, NCAA basketball scoring leader Caitlin Clark has been invited to the latest Team USA training camp, moving her a step closer to potentially being on the Paris roster. The 14-member camp will take place in Cleveland April 3rd through the 5th. It will also include Brittany Griner, Chelsea Gray, who we heard from back in episode 27, and Diana Taurasi, who's looking for her 6th Olympic gold. Shifting to the water, U.S. Rowing has announced the first 21 athletes representing the U.S. at the Paris 2024 Olympic Games this summer. That includes the women's 8 and 4 teams, the women's double sculls, the lightweight women's double sculls, and the men's 4. We're still waiting to see if the U.S. men's 8 can punch their bid at the 2024 World Rowing Final Olympic Qualification Regatta in May. They'll need to finish in the top 2 to compete in Paris. We're learning more about what life inside of Olympic Village will look like. We told you there would be no air conditioning for the athletes, with France instead relying on shade and natural cooling to keep athletes happy. Also, cardboard beds will be back. That was something that was criticized during the Tokyo Games, though experts believe new larger designs will make for a better experience. There'll be no champagne available for athletes in Olympic Village, but condoms will be back. About 300,000 will be supplied, free for athletes to use as these games try to bring back a mingling atmosphere among the athletes nationwide. Speaking of Tokyo this week, we had a chance to speak with one of those Team USA athletes who got to experience the COVID Olympics firsthand, but American modern pentathlon Olympian Samantha Schultz learned a lot about herself during those games. Samantha's one of the athletes featured in the new book, All in Stride, A Journey in Running Courage and the Search for the American Dream, which is out next week. Samantha made the difficult decision not to chase another Olympic bid in 2024, but instead focus on her own physical and mental health.
I talk to a lot of athletes and they say that when they make that decision, the hard part isn't necessarily making the decision. You know, missing teammates and coaches is part of it, but one of the biggest struggles they have is that first cycle after, when they feel like they should be doing something, like there should be some kind of training. Have you felt that at all?
Yeah, I would say there's definitely that feeling of like, I should be doing more training for a sport like pentathlon, where you're doing fencing, swimming, horseback riding, running, and shooting, and you're in the gym for training. It's like, it always just feels like I'm not doing enough. And then, but I think it's like just changing that mentality and also knowing that like I would have loved to continue another 3 years, because this, with the Olympics being postponed on the last quad, it's like, oh, 3 years wouldn't have been that long. But I think just with COVID being 5 years instead of 4, the Olympics being postponed, that was really difficult and a challenge on my body. So there is times where I'm like, I kind of miss it. But then other times where I'm like, I'm kind of glad I'm not having to train 3 to 5 times a day, and I'm able to have other space for other things in my life.
It seems like you're at peace with things and where they're at right now.
Yeah, and it has taken me a while. I know right after the Olympics, I kind of had to think about it for a minute. You're coming off of a big thrill of just competing at the Olympics, and you kind of forget about the last 4 years that you've just trained and how much work and dedication and sacrifice goes into that. And it can be really, I mean, when you go to competitions, that's the time where you get to shine and you get to finally experience this, and being at the Olympics is such a neat experience. You get to meet so many amazing, incredible athletes, not just from Team USA, but all around the world, and competing on one of the biggest stages. And it's like, oh, I didn't do as well as I wanted to, and I want more of that. Yet sometimes you just have to be realistic with yourself. And I think taking a step back and trying to let my body heal, my body really just wasn't where it needed to be at for me to be able to continue another 3 years, and also to continue my marriage, have a success, like just lifelong goals that I have of wanting to be an athlete for the rest of my life. Yes, not maybe an Olympic athlete and competing at the Olympics, but other sports too. So just that longevity aspect.
It really does kind of put everything else on hold when you're in those cycles. I want to talk a little bit about Tokyo, though. What was your experience like there? I mean, it was kind of a weird Olympics, although, you know, walk me through the games. What were some of the interesting parts? What were some of the cool parts? What were some of the parts that maybe you wish you could have gotten back?
Oh my gosh, the Olympics is, like I said, I'm just really grateful that it even was still able to be hosted a year late. Tokyo is just an amazing place in general. The people are so kind. It's a very clean country to begin with. So of all places to have kind of a quote unquote COVID Olympics, I think that was the place where you knew everyone there was going to be clean, immaculate. They were great about the testing. But you're only allowed to go over like 5 days before, and you had to leave like 1 or 2 or 3 days after your event. There was different rules per sport. So our team set up for us to go and train. Team USA built like a little training facility with a cafeteria and pretty much venues for like all kind of sports to be able to train. So we went over to just try to adjust to some of the time, the humidity, just some of those factors that we really couldn't train for here in Colorado Springs. And so we went over a little bit early, but then it's kind of like, that's our own. We had to take that on as like our liability. If we got sick or anything happened to us, that was on us. And it's like, well, then you can't compete. And it was kind of just always in the back of your head, like, I need to be careful. I don't want to test positive, because you never know. Like, there were so many unknowns with COVID. But after the 5 days, we trained for about a week beforehand, and being able to adjust to jet lag, the humidity, because that is definitely something I struggle with as an athlete. We got to go over to the village, and there's a whole shuttle. They kind of take you around. And I mean, just driving through the village, you're just like, there's buildings and buildings and buildings and people walking around everywhere. The cafeteria had like 2 floors, and it's just overwhelming. There's so much going on. And for me, I was just like, okay, try to take it all in. Like, it goes by so quick. And my coach kept reminding me, he competed in the 2012 Olympics, and he was like, take it in. It's going to go by quick. And so I just tried to keep remembering that, and being able to just kind of get used to your room, your bed. I had some roommates that were on the weightlifting team, so being able to meet them. There wasn't as much interaction with international athletes. From what I heard from other athletes that have been to previous Olympics, they said that typically there's a lot more interaction between international athletes, but they said it felt closer knit with Team USA. So there wasn't quite as much mingling with other people. It was like more like, hey, let's go watch the other sports tonight. Let's talk, let's hang out, kind of get our minds off of the pressure of sport or training or whatnot. And so that I really thought was fun, to being in an individual sport. We don't have a huge team aspect in that. And so just being able to get to know other people from other sports was really a neat experience. And then just competing itself in general.
And without your family or friends being allowed to be there, they became your family and friends. Team USA people with the flag were basically your family, you know, for that however short period of time it was, I guess.
Yeah. And it was heartbreaking that my parents and my family and all those people that wanted to support me couldn't be there, but they held watch parties from home. And anytime I saw a camera, I'd always just wave and smile and hoping that maybe my family would be there. And I tried to take some videos of myself and just a lot of the venues and send to people just so they could feel like they were part of it, posting on Instagram, things like that. And I wanted to take people along the journey and make them feel like they were there or a part of kind of like more behind the scenes.
Tell me a little bit about the sport in general. If you're at a party with people and you're explaining to them what you do, just boil it down for us. What do you say?
I compete in the sport of modern pentathlon, and usually they're like, oh yeah, the track events are like track sports. And I was like, nope, it's actually one of the original Olympic sports. It was founded by Pierre de Coubertin, who actually founded the modern day Olympics. And he wanted to encompass a sport that had one of the most well-rounded athletes that encompassed physical, mental, all the skills all in one. And so I say, based on a soldier back in the day, there's a lot of history behind the sport and a strong military background. So if a soldier had to deliver a message across enemy lines, they'd have to know how to ride a horse across any kind of terrain, which brings in the show jumping that we do. If they come to an enemy, they have to know how to shoot. If you run out of ammunition or you pull out your sword, so that's where the fencing comes in. If you come to a body of water, you have to swim across it. And then once you're on the other side, you have nothing left. So you have to run to deliver that message. So I kind of equate it. So like, there's nothing modern about modern pentathlon. And I was like, well, back in the day, that was like the modern soldier, modern warrior. I guess now you could relate it to Hunger Games, or if a zombie apocalypse came, people are like, oh, you'd do really well if that ever happened to us. But kind of tying that into being in the WCAT program for the US Army, I joined in 2017, and being able to do a sport that encompassed so much of being a soldier and also being a soldier myself was just a really neat aspect to be able to tie that in for the Tokyo Olympics too.
Yeah, and can you go a little deeper into the WCAT program? We've talked about it on this show before, but I think not a lot of people are familiar with what it is. You are a member of the U.S. military, but you're actually using that as an opportunity to train to be an Olympian.
Yes, they are supporting us with training, and we uphold our soldier obligations, duties. We're staying up to date on our courses, formations, all kinds of things that we need to do on that side. Like, they definitely don't let us get away with anything, that's for sure. And with that, I was recruited to join the military to be a part of the World Class Athlete Program. And the main hub is in Colorado Springs, at Fort Carson. There's other hubs kind of around where other athletes hang out or the other athletes train. And so that's kind of like our main base for home. And then they have us go. We meet and do formations and also work with other units in other states, other parts of Fort Carson, where we help to teach them training. So whether that's visualization, just different ways to train. A lot of people don't want to be doing like just the regular push-ups, sit-ups, and running. So we try to help kind of come in there and give them a little bit of a different training style, excite them, get them excited. And then so we're utilized in one way to where we can help the other soldiers kind of with their fitness and mental skills. And then us training and competing as a part of Team USA and the Army.
You alluded to earlier some of the struggles you had in the last Olympic cycles, health-wise. Were they all physical? Were they mental? Kind of walk us through that.
I would say they were both physical and mental. I tend to put a lot of pressure on myself and was really hard on wanting to become better. And I think a lot of that turned into some physical struggles that I had with health, of wanting to look like a certain body type as a female athlete. I think there is a lot of struggle that comes with that that a lot of women don't really speak up about, and we struggle internally. And as an athlete, I think sometimes I saw showing emotion or missing practices. If I didn't feel well, I felt that that showed I was weak. And so I would just do what the coaches told me, wouldn't t tell them how I felt. And I think also just being a female, I didn't have a ton of teammates that I could really go to and confide in or talk to them. Like, is this normal that I haven't had my period for this long? Is this normal that I'm tired all the time? My joints hurt, like waking up and always being sore, never feeling like I could really push that hard. So a lot of it was just underfueling and just a lot of that harsh criticism on myself and some of that mental block. As an athlete, you train so hard and you push so hard, but then sometimes when you get to a competition, you have to just put it all into place and kind of let it happen. And I would try to force things or make it happen sometimes when it wasn't really there, and just trust myself and my training and my coaches, which was hard to do at times. But I think asking for help is not, I saw that as a weakness, and that's definitely not something that people should view as a weakness. You should be able to have that open communication with your coach or a therapist or anyone else that you're working with.
I'm amazed when I talk to the athletes going through the cycle now, how many of them are using sports sites? It seems like Team USA is really focused. I don't know if this is the Simone Biles effect from last time. I mean, that definitely brought it to the forefront. But, you know, volleyball players, swimmers, you know, gymnasts going and talking about this and really, and I don't, this probably will give the U.S. an advantage going into this next cycle, is having not only the ability to lift weights and run fast and swim hard, but also kind of the mental growth that is also being built in with this training. I personally, and maybe you've got opinions on this, I feel like it's getting better. I feel like even from the last cycle, like more and more people are talking about it, more and more people are taking advantage of that. Are you noticing that as well?
I'm definitely noticing it. And I think the resources that are available to athletes to be able to get that help, because a lot of times it's like, oh, here's PT, here's someone to help with your injuries. But it's almost like your mental training or your mental working or talking with someone, whether that's a sports psychologist or a therapist, that should be a part of your training. Like that should. And I think for me, that was a big change on, I had to almost make that a practice for me. Otherwise I wouldn't add it in. And I think that's where sometimes we think we need to just work harder to be faster and stronger. We forget about that mental aspect, but there is so much a part of that, especially when it comes down to tenths of a second or just that little last bit. When you're working that hard, like you really just have to hone into that mental stuff. And I think with what happened to Simone Biles and Michael Phelps, just a lot of athletes over time, they've been more outspoken about it. And I think at first it's like, oh my gosh, like how could this happen? These people are so strong. And it's like, we're still normal people. We're still like you, like we struggle with things and we're not perfect. And it's never going to be perfect. We're always trying to be the tippy top. And there is a lot. I mean, the US is always racking up all these medals. And so when you go to the Olympics, you're training for the Olympics, you want to go and perform and do the best for your country. And it's kind of like that pressure is good, but it can also be a heavy weight too.
I read that you're helping others with health and wellness. Is that kind of what you're working on right now? I mean, are you trying to break down those barriers and trying to put these thoughts in the people you work with, like their minds, so that they don't kind of follow the same journey and roadblocks that you did?
Yes. And granted, I'm not working with, say, Olympic level athletes. I've been doing personal training, Pilates, yoga. So working a little bit, I guess over the past 2-3 years, I've been working with a little bit of more like 20 to 30 plus age group. I just recently started coaching strength and conditioning for a club swim team. So I'm starting to work with a little bit younger, about 11 to 18 now. And that's where I'm seeing a lot of like, just trying to be positive with them, challenging them. If you see them get discouraged, trying to say, you know, this, I know this is really challenging right now. And just kind of putting myself back in those shoes of kind of having someone to be that positive voice where I'm going to challenge them, but I also want to be there for them and kind of opening up that door that I'm also here for you if you need a talk. And I think just with some of the older clients that I do work with on that side of things, that positive self-talk, just telling them, you're like, oh, I'm so bad at this, or I'm never going to get this. It's like, no, positive, like talk to yourself positively of like, this is better than it was last week. I will get this. I know it's hard, but this is something new to my body. And so really just trying to get them to like shift those thoughts rather than being so hard on themselves at the beginning. And I think it's just kind of those little things here and there that I'm trying to work on with coaching, personal training, anything in my classes, is just kind of build them up, but also challenge them in ways too.
You're featured in the book All in Stride. First of all, how did you feel about sharing your experiences for the book, and how do you feel about it now that it's out there?
I was pretty nervous about sharing a lot of that stuff with Joanna, the author of the book originally. And a lot of that stuff, like right when I retired or got done with the Olympics, I didn't really think I had a problem. I thought I was okay. I just thought I was struggling with kind of everything an athlete did on that transition. And it was more, my life revolved around food and exercise, and that kind of disordered eating was a full-blown eating disorder. And I ended up deciding to go to treatment for that and was in treatment last summer. And I think that being at treatment, having an eating disorder, any kind of mental health problems, those kind of thrive in secrecy. And I think isolating myself was a thing I did as an athlete and as a person to just deal with my own issues. And that was a bad coping mechanism for me. And so I think being able to be more outspoken has helped me see that I can be a voice for these people that are struggling internally and help them out, because I didn't feel that I really had that myself, or I didn't feel like it was acceptable and I couldn't ask for help. And I think it just can show like so many more people that we do struggle. Like I said before, we're not perfect people. We do struggle with things. And I think that that strive to just be so much better. I mean, it can really happen with anyone, and just getting to have that different perspective, challenge myself in a different way. I think that that was really hard, but I do want to try and be more open and vulnerable. And it is really hard. It's still a little bit scary. But I know that if I can impact like one person out of, I don't know how many, then that's going to be meaningful to me.
Is it possible to completely kick a disorder, or does it bubble itself up occasionally still?
It still occasionally bubbles up, and I also say I'm in recovery. I'm still working with a therapist, a dietitian, and really just trying to take that time to shift, like when I work with clients, on shifting that mindset, because I can still get in my head and be negative about my body's changed since I was competing as an athlete. And sometimes that's hard for me to accept, but I'm also in such a better place. My body is functioning the way it needs to potentially have kids with my husband in the future. So I have to look at things like that, where I have a better balance with life. I'm having more connections with people, and kind of taking a back seat and looking at the bigger picture, which at times can be really hard to do. And I think it just is a journey. And at times it's going to be like, hey, I got this, it's easy. And other days it's like, this is really hard, and I don't know if I can get through that. And that's where a lot of times just having that support system around you, of someone to talk to and be like, I'm having a hard time here. Can we like, just, I don't know, go do something that makes you feel like that brings up your mood. Can we talk? Can we go get a pedicure, go for a walk, or can we just, I don't know, go do an art class, kind of something fun to get you out of that routine. So I think just trying to incorporate that stuff in, it's going to vary for everyone, but kind of still in that recovery right now.
Do you ever want to pull out the fencing gear or jump on a horse?
I do miss horseback riding a lot. I definitely want to try and get back on a horse this summer. And I have a client that actually wanted to start fencing. And so I've been doing some fencing stuff with her. So I haven't quite fenced, but I've been doing a little bit of drills. And that's been fun to kind of bring it back in and share that with someone else and teach them. Because I have like 10 plus years of experience. And so being able to tie that in and share that with others. And yeah, maybe at some point I'll hop back on a horse and fence and whatnot. But I'm just really trying to kind of enjoy being able to move my body and kind of heal those injuries and just enjoy the little things.
One more question. Is there growth in the sport, in pentathlon? Do you see an opportunity to grow the sport in the United States?
I definitely think there's a lot of room to grow the sport. I think even just looking at triathlon, something that's a multi-sport event, having multiple things that you can work on, I think eliminates kind of that burnout, eliminates injuries. And how, if you play soccer 24/7 all the time, and you swim all the time, I think that rate of injury goes up a lot. And that burnout rate, you could get burnt out even before you get to college. And so I think having a sport where you can have multiple things can be really fun, and it can challenge you in different ways. I think the barrier is just having facilities for people to have access to all these things. That can be hard. It's a lot of equipment up front. It's kind of overwhelming, but being able to like have a place where you can fence and shoot. And now that it's laser shooting, you can really shoot anywhere. So I think the sport has developed and grown into something that can be done in a lot more places. But it does require you to have a good, good access to a gym or a facility that has fencing or shooting, and somewhere you can run and swim. So that is a lot. And they will be taking out the horseback riding for not Paris, but the Olympics. That'll be in 2028 in LA. So that'll kind of change things up too. And that'll be interesting. I have no idea kind of what to expect from that, but hopefully I'll be able to go to LA and watch the Olympics. And I wish I could be there in Paris competing myself or just to watch, but I mean, I know those athletes are working hard. I still follow along, and it's just amazing and incredible to watch athletes from any sport training and competing.
Where can people follow you? Are you active on social media?
Yes, I am. I'm on Instagram at Samantha A USA. So you can follow along there. Also have a YouTube channel, Sammy Schultz. So you can go check it out there. I have videos, workout videos, baking videos, and also some videos from when I was competing. So if you're curious about what a pentathlon looks like or what it entails, you can go check out some of the videos there and also some of the countries I've gotten to compete in.
Once again, the book written by Joanna Garten, All in Stride, A Journey in Running Courage and the Search for the American Dream, is out April 2nd. You can actually go back to episode 25 to hear a little bit more from the author. Well, that'll do it for this week's episode of Quest for Gold. Next week, we speak with an Olympic silver medalist who specializes in the steeplechase. I'm Ryan Burrow. We'll be back stateside. I'll see you then.